You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I have taken a break from considering taking a meeting with the Warriors in case they open up a max slot to talk to Harrison, who was doing the same before he came onto the show. Harrison, who do you think between the two of us is more likely to get invited for a meeting with the Golden State Warriors?
I think it's going to be me because, number one, there's no video of me playing basketball, and so I think that kind of works against you in your case.
The 76ers redshirt freshman or redshirt rookie thing.
Yeah, exactly. I got like the Ben Simmons like unknown quantity thing going for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's also like Kevin, they have seen very close up, like skinny guys can succeed in the NBA. People have always said, Harrison, you have a very similar body type to Kevin Durant. And, you know, I'm always a little flattered by that. But so I think, like, you know, if you were to team me with LeBron, Steph, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson, and LeBron, you know.
Oh, I said Durant.
And Durant, yes, yeah. That's what I meant. I think that'd be a pretty solid lineup, despite me just getting obliterated by my man every single play.
My favorite thing that happens in an NBA game sometimes is when the other team realizes that there's a player on the court who cannot either guard the person that is in front of them or anybody else on the court with them, and they just pick on that player for like three or four straight plays or sets.
The Lou Williams corollary.
Yeah, or I think the Lakers did it to Dwight Howard when they played Charlotte, and they just kept running pick and roll, and they said after the game that they felt like he couldn't guard the pick and roll, and they just kept picking on him and picking on him and picking on him. I feel like it would be 100 straight possessions of whichever team is playing against the Golden State Warriors just finding you and picking on you.
Yeah, even if it was like Thabo Sefolosha that I was guarding or something, they just still...
Tyler Ennis, yeah.
Yeah, Tyler Ennis. Tyler Ennis would light me up.
Yes. Yeah. So, all right. I guess we should talk about what we're going to talk about on the show.
I guess. Yeah, that was a weird cold open, but you know, we specialize in those.
We are going to talk a little bit about Lonzo Ball's injury. He's been ruled out for the remainder of this road trip that the Lakers are on. It will extend. He's already been out for going on 3 weeks. It will extend into just about a month, really.
Yeah, it'll be 10 games at least by the end of this that he's missed.
And so we're going to speculate a little bit about what might be going on there and give our thoughts on that. And then on the second half of the show and on through the rest of the show, we're going to answer some questions. Harrison, what do we have to look forward there?
So we got some questions on Larry Nance Jr. and his trade value and what teams might be interested in him. We got some question on whether or not like Kuzma could be like a sixth man of the year candidate. And then we have a question on the Lakers like free throw shooting woes and what they could maybe do to fix it. So we're going to get to that stuff from you guys and keep leaving those 5-star reviews. We will get to these in the mailbags. And yeah, let's get going, Anthony. So how much of a bust do you feel like Lonzo Ball is because of this injury?
One of these days, you're going to let me actually do my job. When I give you an opportunity to like showcase what we're going to talk about in the game or in the show, you always forget the fact that we are contractually obligated to tell people where they can find the show.
No, man, they're already listening to the show. It's fine.
Well, okay, but if you just happen to be listening to the first episode, one, I'm sorry. Two, if you're listening on a platform that you don't normally prefer, you can find the show on all kinds of platforms, starting with Megaphone and Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, where Harrison writes, Lakers Outsiders, where I write. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Harrison is at HMFagan. I am at Anthony Irwin LA. My notifications right now are not a disaster. They've been really fun. I asked on Twitter what anybody's least athletic injury is, and the responses, I laughed so hard. I finally got a chance to sit down and read some of them, and I laughed so hard last night. I was reading them next to Jen when she was sleeping, and she woke up, and I almost got a really unathletic injury. So let's go. Let's talk about another. This one's an actually athletic injury. Lonzo Ball tweaked his knee posting up against, I think it was Dennis Smith Jr., against the Dallas Mavericks.
Who can remember? It was so long ago.
It does feel like forever ago. It's been 10 games. It's been 10 games with Tyler Ennis starting, and I feel like I've aged a few years. But what?
I have more gray hairs in my beard than I did like a week ago.
Yes. Yeah. And you have fewer hairs on the top of your head than you had.
Let's not draw attention to that.
But I feel like at this point we can start wondering, all right, what's actually going on behind the scenes here, right? Because at first they didn't want to announce what the actual injury was, and then they finally did, and they acted as if nobody was going to recognize or realize that they were announcing the injury weeks after the initial injury took place. So I think at some point, I don't think it's necessarily on the training staff, but I feel like the Lakers are handling this a little questionably.
Yeah, I mean, I think the weird part is that initially they were just like, it's a knee injury. And then, like you said, a couple weeks later, they're like, haha, just kidding, MCL sprain, which I guess they didn't lie. Technically, an MCL sprain is a knee injury, mm-hmm. but it's a little bit more specific than just like, you know, Lonzo has an owie on his knee. And the way that they've gone about it, where it's like they just won't give a timeline, where and like I don't even know that this is necessarily a bad thing, because what they shouldn't do is give a timeline that's too optimistic and then delay him, because then that like either you put pressure on him to come back too early, or it makes perception that he's injury prone or whatever. But the way that they're handling it right now, to me, from like a public relations standpoint, I don't think is very good, and like a perception standpoint, I don't think is very good, because what they're doing is they're basically just like every couple games the beat reporters have to check in and be like, hey, so when's Lonzo coming back? And they're like, well, we don't know, we're gonna see how he feels. And if you just keep doing that, there's this perception, I think, that is going to build that, you know, they're just handling it wrong, or that they're like either they're being overly cautious, or that they're hiding something. And there's just nothing good can come from this non-specificness. And so I think if you just come out and say like, hey, he has an MCL sprain, he's going to be out until like probably this date. And even if you're way over conservative on the estimate, if he comes back early, nobody's going to question that. But at least if you give a timeline, then people have something where they're like, okay, this is a normal injury that they kind of understand. Right now, I think there's a lack of understanding among the general public and among people in – I know people in my mentions, probably people in your mentions too, about what is even going on right now.
It has been a question that I've gotten, and it's a question that I've kind of wondered about. I've asked Jen why it might be taking a little bit longer, and she said that it could be literally anything. It'd be a pain tolerance thing, it could be a caution thing on the Lakers' part, it could be anything. But what it this the Lakers' treatment of this, not the treatment of the injury, but the treatment of the PR situation is allowing for speculation, right? And I think at this point the cat's kind of out of the bag. The longer that he misses, the more people are going to wonder about it. So it's the kind of thing that's only going to fix itself. But as it stands right now, it's the Lakers really miss this kid. He's really fun to watch play basketball. So I, as a Laker fan, miss watching him play. He is not Tyler Ennis, which is also important. It's going to be interesting as buyout season, as we get into buyout and trade season, as veterans become more available, if the Lakers maybe target a veteran to take Tyler Ennis' place. And, you know, maybe they don't believe in Alex Caruso to the point where they just make him the full-time starter and waive Ennis. I know Jameer Nelson could become available. That's a name that
I think definitely... I saw earlier today that they were saying the Bulls were planning to keep him.
I saw the opposite. I saw Woj say that they were planning to waive him.
Oh, my bad. I may have misunderstood Woj.
but I mean, it's we're in that rumor season where things can go one way or the other.
No, Woj said Bulls are planning to keep Jameer Nelson.
Oh, maybe it was a different thing that I saw. It was
earlier. Yeah, you saw earlier when he said they will consider waiving Nelson. I guess in 2 hours later, they changed their mind and told Woj that.
It would be funny. I've kind of thought about this. If I was the social media person for one of these teams, and it was my last job, I had just won the lottery, I don't have to worry about taking another job for the rest of the time, and Woj puts out a tweet that is incorrect about what they're thinking about doing, just troll him from the team account.
He's like, never incorrect, though. That's the thing.
It's pretty crazy.
He's like bulletproof, and it's because he has like all these. He has sources everywhere now.
Yeah, yeah. But I would still take that risk. If I mean, it's not from my account, so why not?
Yeah, sure. So that has been Anthony's pitch to run at Lakers. So get at him, Ty Noel.
It's never happening. We are going to start answering these questions. I think it, like we said, there's nothing. People can speculate about it all we want, but what it's really going to come down to is when he takes the court, these things will go away. If he doesn't take the court again, then the whispers will become talking points, and the talking points will become yelling, because that's how these things work.
Yeah, and just like everybody already, Lonzo's so polarizing already. Why give people more fuel to have stupid debates about him? Just put a timeline on it.
Yeah. Incompetent organization remains incompetent. We are going to move on to these questions here in a second. All right, first question, go.
All right, so Anthony, this one comes to us from VenL33, and they ask, what is Nance's trade value? I'm just going to throw all of these out there, and then we can discuss them like as a whole. But what is Nance's trade value in draft picks, and which contender might consider trading for him this year? So I don't know, like, what do you think that there's a contender out there that you're looking at that's like obviously, yeah, Nance could help them?
Ooh, I would have said the Pelicans before they traded for Mirotić, because I think Nance would fit pretty well alongside Anthony Davis, but I think Mirotić fits obviously better because of his ability to shoot. I don't think Nance, to me, I'm lower on Nance than just about anybody, because
yeah. I think the thing is he just looks so much better on a better team that didn't need him ever shoot.
Because
I think to me he does.
I was thinking about this.
If you have other guys that can create and he can just do little Larry Nance things, then I think he looks a lot better.
I would agree with the premise, but I was thinking about it a little bit more deeply, and when you're on a good team, you're put into higher leverage situations, and in those higher leverage situations, the better teams are going to find the weaknesses both offensively and defensively. And if I'm playing defense in a high leverage situation against a good team and Larry Nance Jr. is on the court, I basically just leave him completely alone. And what that does is again, he's not good enough defensively to make up for that kind of thing. So yes, he can make the hustle plays and in 5 to 10 minute stretches or whatever. But as currently constituted, I don't know if I would want to play him in a playoff game. I don't know if I would necessarily go that far quite yet.
I think on a team with more shooting and a team with more playmaking, then he would be able to beat that type of coverage by, you know, just getting to the basket and like being a nuisance around there. And I just think that it would be less glaring if there were less times where he was like getting the ball towards the end of the shot clock and actually having to do something.
Yeah. And even still, he doesn't really have that situation pop up very often with the Lakers. It's just there are situations where the ball rotates over to him, and Caruso is starting to do some of this too, where neither of those guys can make an open jumper, so they are starting to, or in Nance's case, he's already leaked all the confidence out, but now Caruso is starting to leak a ton of confidence in his shot. And so what you're starting to have, and I was seeing it, it started to pop up yesterday, or not yesterday, but in their last game against the Orlando Magic, it started to pop up where you're seeing the ball rotate over to Caruso, and instead of pulling the trigger and shooting the outside shot, he's attacking a closeout that isn't necessarily there. And he's attacking a defense that, because of the way that the ball has rotated, they have, and because of the scouting report on some of the guys that the ball might be rotating over to, the defense just basically keeps a foot in the key, and they respond by just not hurting themselves. And Caruso winds up driving into two or three guys with the intent it's still to pass and make a pass that isn't necessarily there, and it turns into a turnover. And I feel like with Nance in a high leverage situation, you'll see that every single time he touches the ball.
Maybe.
In terms of trade value, it's hard to gauge Nance's trade
value. If it was a contender, I think that you could get, like, you could maybe get a late first from him if they were a team that really liked him, but definitely at least a second.
Yes, I would say a second. I don't think a...
But then at that point, like, I guess you're trading back in terms of value of the original pick, but, you know, it just depends on where the Lakers value Nance moving forward, and based on the way that they've continued to play him this season, despite him not really helping a lot of the time, although he's been better lately, you know, I think that they do believe in him as part of their future.
If Julius Randle can't fetch you a first rounder, Larry Nance Jr. can't fetch you a first rounder.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Well, the difference is that Larry Nance Jr. is has a little bit more on his contract and isn't going to be super expensive this summer.
1 year at a minimum thing, and then they have to pay him after that. And he will be cheaper than Randle because he isn't as good. So I guess it depends on what you're looking for in that, what the team would be looking for in that. If you trade for a Randle, it's because you want to make him a larger piece of your team, I think, right? If you trade for Nance, you're saying we just got our energy guy off of the bench. So
yeah, I agree 100%. And there is a second part to this question, which we are going to get to in a second. So the second part of then L33's question was, if Lonzo was averaging about 5 to 6 more points points on league average shooting, would he be in the Rookie of the Year and future All-Star conversation? I think absolutely yes.
Yeah, that's not even a question.
Yeah, that's barely even a question. No, all due respect to the question, but Lonzo has been so good at everything else, and people are so obsessed with points per game and shooting as the only way that they evaluate basketball, that, yeah, if he was shooting, like, you know, like closer to 50% from the field, like, I don't know, like 45% from the field, closer to 50, and he was shooting, like, I don't know, like league average on threes and averaging 5 or 6 more points per game, and then with the assists that he has and the defense that he has, he might win Rookie of the Year, to be honest.
No, I think Simmons
has been really good, but I think that if you saw that from Lonzo, there would be a narrative that started like, well, Simmons isn't a true rookie, Lonzo deserves it more, you know, and Lonzo might get like the West Coast media bump as well.
The problem is that it would necessitate a lot of people admitting they were wrong, and that just doesn't happen.
Well, but I mean, in this hypothetical scenario, he's doing that, and like, so they wouldn't have been wrong.
No, I mean, I'm saying that there would... So there were a lot of people when Lonzo was coming in who were questioning Lonzo for all kinds of reasons.
Oh, you mean back at the draft, okay.
Yeah, so like if... And it would necessitate a lot of people to admit that they were wrong about questioning him in any way, shape, or form. And it would necessitate them saying that LeVar doesn't really matter that much, right? And so I just... In this media landscape, I just don't see that happening. I mean, just point... Look at... Stupid Major League Baseball Hall of Fame voting. Barry Bonds isn't in there for some reason, because people just won't admit to the fact that, okay, maybe we need to rethink some stuff.
that doesn't really happen. Was using steroids,
right? So, I would agree that he would belong in the conversation and would 100% deserve the attention of potential Rookie of the Year awarding. Let alone a place in that discussion. And I would say the Lakers would be... I would say that the 5 points per game more on efficient shooting for Lonzo would probably lead to about 3 extra wins, I would say.
Yeah, and people would be calling him, like, just a winner and all this, like, all this intangible stuff. His numbers would look even better in terms of advanced metrics. Like, yeah, he would absolutely be in the conversation if that was the case.
And he stayed healthy, right?
Like, yeah, I guess we'll see if he can get there when he comes back.
Yeah.
So the next question that we got was from LA240825, which I'm, like, with the 2 Kobe jersey numbers, I'm not sure where the 25 comes from, but... asks, can Kuzma be a legit Sixth Man of the Year candidate? I'm going to go ahead and say no, but he has been incredible.
I think for a rookie
coming off the bench, like if there's a rookie Sixth Man of the Year, Kuzma would win it.
Lou Williams is legitimately, like, had they not traded Blake Griffin and the Clippers had like 2 or 3 extra wins, Lou Williams would be Lou Williams has already won the award, basically.
He's been starting, though, hasn't he?
I know he's had, I think he's like the first player ever to have 40 and 10 off of the bench, and I saw that the other night. So, but he...
He's been really good, too. But
so like, I think Kuzma, again, it gets back to... So the problem when you say, would somebody hypothetically get an award that they don't deserve right now, it then forces somebody, it forces us to then crap on the person who is deserving of it right now. And I'm just not willing to say that Kuzma in any way, shape, or form has been better than, like, Lou Williams.
No, right? But again, like, it is important to acknowledge that as a rookie, coming off of the bench, he's playing 30.4 minutes a game, but he's leading the Lakers in scoring with 16.2. For a long time, he was leading them 3-point percentage. He's back in the lead after last night at 36.9, which isn't amazing, but it's pretty good, especially for a stretch four. And, like, his defense is getting better, his playmaking is getting better by the game. I mean, obviously, other than against Orlando, but everybody was bad against Orlando. And so, like, I don't know. I just am, even though I said I wanted to see a little bit more from him down the stretch when we did our, like, expectations podcast two episodes ago, I still can't understate how impressed I've been with Kuzma and how wrong I was going into Summer League when I was like, yeah, no, I mean, like, and even in Summer League when I was like, yeah, he'll spend time in the G League this year. Nope. That was not the case. I was very, very wrong on that. Did not realize that he would probably be like... He hasn't been the Lakers' best player, but he's been one of their best five players.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason. It's a hipster take that is used usually to rile up Laker Twitter. But there's a reason there's a lot of people out there who say Kyle Kuzma has been the best Lakers rookie, which, you know, there are cases to be made either way. I would still probably go with Lonzo as evidenced by how the team looks without him.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess the other thing too is availability.
You mean winning 8 of their 10 games?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. but availability is an ability, and I don't believe Kuzma, if he's missed any games, it's not very many.
Yeah, he actually leads the no, he doesn't lead the Lakers in games played. The Lakers have played 50 games. Kuzma has missed one. I actually remember that. It was back spasms.
Yeah, so that's also goes as something that is really impressive that he has played.
You want to guess the only two guys to play in every single game?
Clarkson.
Okay, that's one.
And Randall.
Yep, that's hilarious to me. Like, just because they're the guys that everybody is saying are on the way out, yep. And they're out here playing in every single game.
Yeah, just quietly plugging along.
You know, yeah, surviving the war of attrition that is the NBA season.
But what I was going to say, the point I was going to make about Kuzma is that he's played beyond himself and played long minutes and still has only missed one game as a rookie. That in and of itself, before we even get to the statistical offensive production, that in and of itself is pretty freaking insane.
That's a feat of endurance. And so he's not going to win Sixth Man of the Year, but I don't even think he's been a top three rookie.
Top five. Top four or five, I would say, because you got Simmons. I would still have Lonzo in that discussion. Donovan Mitchell has been just outright special.
Simmons and Mitchell were the two guys that I had for sure ahead of him. I guess I'd probably lean Lonzo just for overall impact, but Kuzma's probably four for me.
Yeah, I think Simmons has a little gap, and then there's Mitchell, and then there's another tiny little gap, and then there's the Lonzo, Tatum, Kuzma grouping.
Get Tatum out of here. He doesn't count. He's on a good team. Let's see him do it on a bad team.
Yeah, all right, I guess. But you still have to give him credit for still being good.
I give him zero credit, Anthony. We don't give credit to Celtics on this podcast.
Ooh, good point. He sucks.
Yeah, terrible. Bust.
Yeah.
Danny Ainge only drafts bust.
Channing Tatum's better anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, what's the next question?
So this is the last listener question. It's from Nick Batchelor. I'm going to go ahead and call him friend of the show because I know we've gotten questions from him before. And he says, hello, Anthony and Harrison. What can the Lakers coaching staff do to get the players shooting better? We can be back to a 500 team and make a playoff spot if they make their free throws. I'm frustrated. So we're all frustrated, Nick. And, you know, I appreciate you listening to the show from out in Thailand. And I wish that I knew the answer to this. What could the Lakers coaching staff do to get the players shooting better? Because if I did have the answer to this, then the Lakers would hire me to be their shooting consultant, and I would make significantly more money than I am making now. But, and I wouldn't have to talk to Anthony every day, which would be nice. But I think it's like Luke's forcing all of them to make like what, like 100 free throws before they leave the gym every day.
Mm-hmm.
I think at this point it's got to be mental.
Yeah. So the problem with even that though, the problem with Luke telling them that, all right, you have to make 100 free throws before you leave every day, is that, well, now you're just having somebody stand at the free throw line and the only thing that they have to focus on is making free throws, right? So I've never really been a huge proponent of free throws being made in bulk. I would always – now maybe there are – I've never seen them work on their free throws. But when I was coaching and when I do shooting coaching, I'd always incorporate some kind of other play, right? It's just like in golf – you could go out there and you can go to the range and you can hit 50 straight really good drives, right? But then you step out onto the course and you have to make that one good drive and then hit a completely different shot, and then you have to step up to the next hole and hit that one good drive again. It's harder to replicate it, right? So I personally don't know. I can't really speak to what a shooting coach would do differently, because I have no idea what the Lakers are doing in their free throw shooting practicing. But yeah, there has to be a mental – there's always going to be a mental aspect to it. And in that sense, maybe a sports psychologist would be a good idea.
They brought in the sports psychologist, and they're like – they're working them on meditation and like all of this like kind of out, like, you know, out of the box stuff. And to be honest, I'm just not really sure what more they can do that they aren't doing. Like at some point, like the guys just have to make the free throws.
There was a time I had a team that wasn't very good at free throw shooting, and this worked for a little bit, but then, you know, they kind of returned to normalcy and they regressed to the mean. But we were not very good at free throw shooting, and every day in practice, I would have like a half hour of our practice devoted to free throw shooting in some way, shape, or form. There was spurs throughout the practice. It wasn't like we would just sit down and we had a half hour of free throw shooting. But after like every single drill, when the guys were really tired, I would say, all right, you have to make five straight free throws, right? And every time if you don't make five straight free throws, then you have to get down and do like five push-ups. And
did you tell them to man up too?
Well, I did all this with my arms crossed, which was kind of tough because I would sometimes join in on the drill too. And push-ups are kind of tough with your arms crossed, and making free throws similarly difficult with your arms crossed. But, you know, if the former Laker coach could do it, then, oh, he couldn't really do it.
Yeah.
I regret that coaching technique now. I have a lot to think about.
Yeah, exactly. You have become the redacted that you didn't want to see in the world.
Yeah. But what I did with the team though is like we were focusing on it so much, and we were doing so much to think about free throw shooting that it was always at the forefront of their mind. So one practice, and for like a couple practices in a row, I just said, "F it, we aren't working on free throws at all. We're just going to have a normal practice. We aren't going to think about it. We aren't going to talk about it. I don't need to hear about any of it." Right. We know that this is a
And did any reporters then ask your players about the free throws?
I know their parents did, right?
Like, yeah. So that kind of counts. That's the same thing.
But what we had was, for, you know, a few games or so, we shot better free throws, and eventually they regressed to a little worse shooting, but it was a different practice that sometimes it's like out of the box thinking of, you know what, screw it. We're going to stink no matter what, so we may as well focus on other parts of the game. That can sometimes work. And it
probably gets your mind off of it to some degree. Yeah. So maybe that would be a good idea, is just to, like, you know, just take a break from it, not think about it, and like, get out of your own heads.
We always heard, right, that Shaq shot like 80% free throws in practice, and like DeAndre Jordan will make...
That's a lie. I don't buy that.
Oh, I don't either. But
I had DeAndre Jordan's free throw shooting coach tell me in my face one time at a coaching clinic back in my other life as a youth basketball coach that he went like 9 of 10 at the line every time in practice. And I'm like, I do not believe you for a second.
Well, I don't know if I believe him to the extent of 9 out of 10 at the line. Although DeAndre Jordan's shot is significantly more clinical than Shaq's. Shaq's was just wow. But what I do know is that these pros are just really effing good in practice situations.
No, it's crazy. Like, if you watch NBA players, just watch, if you've never been to an NBA game, like, first of all, I'm surprised you're listening to this podcast. Second of all, Like, go watch a game and go early and watch them shoot around. These guys shoot, like, basically, like, now I'm doing the Clippers coach thing, but basically, like, 90%.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I remember when I was younger, we went to a Laker game, and my dad took me early because, I've always been a shooting nut. Like, that's the only thing in basketball I was ever fully confident about. And I used to love the intricacies of how different guys shot the ball. And I remember one time I noticed the different footwork that Kobe used to do on his step back to gain a little extra separation, and I freaked out about it. I ran upstairs and I told my dad, and my dad just looked at me. It's like some kind of weirdo. But we went early to one of these games, and we had pretty good seats, and we were watching Kobe warm up, and it was unbelievable. The ability to replicate it just perfectly with arc.
Kobe was an insane technician.
Yeah, it was unreal. And I'm sure if any of you have the opportunity to go see these guys who you don't even consider good shooters, not named Markelle Fultz, you'll go watch these guys shoot and you'll just say, how do these guys ever miss, right? And that's when people say, hey, NBA players don't play good defense. That's the thing you can point to is that, no, I watched these guys in warmups and they weren't missing anything. And then the game goes, the game turns on and these guys do miss shots. Like that's in part because of the defense and because of everything going on the court. So, but yeah, to answer the
actual question. And for free throws, like it's the crowd, it's the pressure, it's you're alone at the line. It's all of that stuff that you think it would be.
That's the only place that I think I'm okay with considering choking, right? So calling somebody a choker is like at the free throw line where you have had the ability to practice that shot infinite amounts of time and with infinite repetition. And yet in big moments, if you consistently miss those free throws in big moments, that's where I'm okay with questioning mental ability in or mental fortitude in that situation. That's like one of really
the only I guess time. That's fair.
Yeah. All right, any other questions?
Nope, that's all the questions we got. So go ahead, 5-star review, leave your questions, and we will get to them in the mailbag. We are like pretty much batting 100% on getting to questions.
Almost as high a percentage, at least, as DeAndre Jordan in practice at the free throw.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Just to bring things full circle.
I do want to touch on this really quickly because I think it's something that fans, people who don't like me, I'm going to try to pick up some cred here, but.
Ugh.
I'm going to try. Okay, I'm going to be positive. I want to be positive here. Okay?
Can I leave, or do I need to say?
I guess you can if you want. I mean, I think they'll want your feedback here as well.
Fine.
And we could always edit that back and forth out if you want. But so this is the second time now. Apparently on the TBF pod, what is it? The Basketball Friends pod. I think Windhorse was on it again and mentioned something about David Fizdale because now LeBron is in the news or rumor cycle again because he may or may not, if the Warriors find a way, take a meeting with the Warriors. It was one of the weakest reports I've ever seen. But
like, yeah, if the Warriors can clear max space, then out of respect for their winning culture, LeBron would take a meeting.
Which they aren't even focused on trying to do right now, by the way.
There's just like... Like, if you look at the machinations that they'd have to do to be able to get the... Like, come on, guys. Like,
like I'll say
stop
this.
Being stupid?
If a blogger reported that, the reception to that report...
Well, right, the difference is, that, like, Chris Haynes actually has these sources telling him...
But I don't care. It was a weak-ass report. Like, if I'm going to call...
I mean, no, it's probably true that LeBron would do this, but, like, come on. Sure,
but, like, if I'm going to make fun of Keith Smith every time he says a team may or may not be thinking about
trading... Well, the difference
is
that Chris Haynes has sources.
But, again, I don't care. That was a weak-ass report. Like, we don't need that. That was just... When people say clickbait, when people throw out the word out there, clickbait, this was literally the definition of clickbait. Like, the definition. That LeBron might take a meeting with the Warriors. And then the second graph is Haynes saying that the Warriors aren't even thinking about trying to do this. So it's like, what was the point, right? Clicks. But anyway, to get back to what I was going to say, Windhorse goes on the TBF podcast and apparently was again posturing that the Lakers might consider David Fizdale, that executives around the league are again wondering about David Fizdale for the Lakers. And it leads to people listening to that and thinking, oh, is Luke Walton again on the hot seat? And I just want to say, from what I have heard, from what other people who cover the Lakers have heard, from every single bit of Los Angeles Lakers sourcing, Luke Walton's seat on the Lakers bench,
it is ice cold.
Is freezing. It's almost uncomfortable.
Like it's almost so cold that he might want to get up.
Yeah, like he paces up and down the sideline and asks Jesse Mermes to sit on his seat just to keep it a little warm, because he gets up and bang, wow, look at that. It's frozen.
Jesse Mermes like sits down and he's like, "Oh, it's so cold, brah."
Exactly. So what I want to, like, the point of what we were talking about here is this isn't a conversation. This is not something that they are thinking about in the Lakers organization. It is not something that they would think about this season. I don't even know if they would think about it this offseason. If LeBron stepped to the Lakers and said, "Hey, the only way I will sign with the Lakers is if we hire David Fizdale," I would go so far as to say that the Lakers would consider it. They would have to think about it first.
No, I'm pretty sure they'd do it immediately.
No, I'm telling you, Luke, because
Luke is beloved, but like that's LeBron James. The problem with that though is the
precedent that it sets, right? Like the reason, a huge part of the reason why LeBron was as successful as he was in Miami was because Pat Riley didn't give him everything that he wanted. Now
that is why LeBron is no longer in Miami.
Well, Miami still has those two titles, right? And I'm sure they feel pretty good about those two titles.
But I'm saying, like, you're not at this point, LeBron knows his value. He knows that there is no one on this planet, for better or worse. Some people don't like this, but for better or worse, LeBron knows that there's no one in basketball that is more powerful than him. And he is not going to just come and like not have his wishes like met. And who's to say, like, we don't know that his wish is that the Lakers hire David Fizdale. That might be him playing for Luke Walton might be the whole reason he wants to come to LA, for all we know. Like, but if he went to the Lakers and said, "You need to hire Dave Fizdale and I'll come," like, I don't even think that they'd hesitate.
I think they would at least ask him why.
Well, sure, but I think when he said "It doesn't matter, I want Dave Fizdale," they'd say, "Okay, we're going to get you Dave Fizdale."
Okay, but again, and
how much
and
do you
I
want
think,
us to
I
pay
think,
him?
I think,
do we need to re-sign KCP?
I do think to a certain extent they would eventually hire David Fizdale, because coaching versus players or whatever, right? Coaching, there is no cap, and the Lakers have a ton of money, so they can at least pay Luke Walton's contract while they have David Fizdale there, and it doesn't hurt them in terms of their ability to sign other people, right? So to that extent, sure. But I do think I would at least be concerned, having seen GM LeBron in Cleveland, that I don't know if I would hand him the keys to just make every and any decision regarding the team. I just don't. J.R. Smith's contract is a disaster. Tristan Thompson's contract is a disaster.
So would you not sign LeBron then?
I would at the end of the day.
When he says "I don't care" and he says "You're going to do what I say," what would you do? You still sign him. Like, that's just what it is. Like, LeBron, and you deal with that. LeBron runs your team now. I don't think that the Cavs would take the same as you said Miami wouldn't take back the two titles. I don't think that the Cavs would regret this era as dramatic and like overwrought with rumors and speculation and drama as it's been. That they wouldn't take back that one title for anything.
I would, man, that would be a tough one.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if LeBron says I'm coming, but I'm going to run the team, LeBron's running the team.
And
like,
I also think, though, too, the other thing to keep in mind here is that LeBron has exponentially more respect for Magic than he does Dan Gilbert.
That's probably true.
And I don't think he would be willing
to listen to Magic's input. But ultimately, like, wherever LeBron goes, LeBron, and as much as he says, I'm not the GM, LeBron is getting input on everything, and nothing is happening that LeBron is not okay with.
I don't know, man. If he goes to Golden State and he says, you guys have to rethink everything, and Klay Thompson is now J.R. Smith.
That's the scenario where, like, that's the one scenario where they say, we have something strong enough here that we can reject
you. If he goes to the Spurs and says, hey, I want David Fizdale here instead of Greg Popovich, I think the Spurs tell him to kick
rocks. Well, first of all, Greg Popovich would say, I'm not going to fire myself.
Well, right, but
Popovich at that point might be like, okay, you guys get LeBron then. Like, maybe he might be ready to hang him up.
Maybe. I do think the Spurs would probably try to convince Popovich to stay.
Sure, but those teams have something that the Lakers don't,
that's where the Lakers are trying to get. Like, they want organizational stability. They want
organizational. So you're going to say no to LeBron to make a show of force? I don't know. I just don't think that
I don't know if it's a show of force. I'm just saying that it's something that I would think long and hard about if I were the Lakers. I would at least try
and
to talk
you
LeBron.
LeBron. Sell your soul.
I'd go so far as to say no. I would not sign LeBron. If he said I want the keys to the entire franchise and I want to sign anybody and everybody I can, and whichever organization, if the Lakers are, I'm going to rename them the Clutch, the Clutch marketing agency that he has now. Like, I
welcome our new Clutch. They said Kobe had the Clutch gene. Now the Lakers have the Clutch franchise.
We saw what happened when the Lakers did that with Kobe. Like, I'm sorry,
there's a pattern, you're saying, of them doing this.
And I would like to, I would prefer if they bucked.
And they're now run by Kobe's agent.
Yeah, and look how well it's going. Look at how great it is. Magic's work ethic is being questioned.
You're lying to yourself if you're saying you would let that stop you from signing LeBron.
I honestly don't think I am. I just don't think he's. I think he needs. It's kind of like Jack Black making movies. That, like, I enjoy Jack Black if he's like the second guy, right? And he's just there to be comedic relief. But if you hand the keys over to Jack Black, I wind up walking out on films. Right? It's like that with LeBron when you're going to have him for what, 4 or 5 years?
This is not where I expected this conversation to go.
Yeah, I'm surprising myself as I'm saying this stuff. But to get back to the original point, I think Luke's seat is as cold a seat.
Yes.
Throughout the NBA. And so
LeBron says the only way I come is that you bring in David Fizdale.
Yeah. So every time you hear or see Brian Windhorst's five chins wobbling as he says that the Lakers are considering.
You have to take shots at everybody.
I do, because this is bull. Like, I hate the double standard this guy has sourcing on. Like, I'll at least consider. And I wound up being able to confirm some of what Levitard was saying. But I'll run with that because I know that he is close to Pat Riley, and I'm sure that he and Pat Riley have probably had a conversation, and Pat Riley said that Magic has told me that, and I'm not saying that this is actually what happened, but I could see a situation where Pat Riley tells Levitard that Magic told him that this was harder than he anticipated. Because it is. It's probably way harder than Magic anticipated. So I'm at least willing to run with that. But when Windhorst sourcing is from other executives around the league.
And he's upfront about that. He says that this is people around the league. And so, like, the issue is when people take that and run with it as if this is what the Lakers are saying.
Right, which people are doing. And that's where, you know, I'm here to refute it. I'm here to directly refute that.
But that has nothing to do with Windhorst. He's upfront that these are, like, other teams saying this.
Yeah. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the podcast, of the Lockdown Lakers podcast. Enjoy Super Bowl weekend, everybody. Please, please stay safe out there. Please don't drink and drive. Enjoy your parties. Don't do anything dumb. To the city of Minneapolis, I'm really sorry. You went from hosting your home team to now getting Patriots fans and Philly fans. That must really stink. I'm sorry. But please stay safe out there, everybody, over the weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday.